My name is Dick Blumkirk, this is my wife Kathy, and we are for 2 weeks presenting a series of either presentations or hikes that we're entitling Finding Our Place in Creation, with the assumption that there are many signs around us that we as human beings have in many ways lost that sense of place and belonging. And Kathy's going to be leading a hike this afternoon because of tomorrow. We're sort of putting two sessions in one day. And so I guess I'm sort of officially doing the primary job of leading at this session today. We can, if you haven't started rolling the tape, you can start rolling it. Sorry.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me?
No.
Okay. So I put this thing on. Tell me if that works. Does that help?
I haven't put mine together.
Well, wait a second then. I appreciate that. I'd forgotten about these, so thank you.
Well, some I hear and some I don't. It depends on the pitch of the voice, I think, more than anything else.
And my voice is hard to hear, and I tend to drop my voice sometimes too. So if you can't, raise your hand and just say, speak up over there. And I don't mind that a bit. The one thing I want to say by introduction and not by apology is that I'm not a theologian by training, I'm a parish pastor. And the topic that I'd like to talk to you about today has been a concern of mine for some years. And I might add that I do have a slight frustration right now, and that is that because this whole business of caring for the earth and finding our place as a church is, I think, a relatively new thing. Most of the papers and the documents that have been written are written by really fine theologians, but they're written within the community of themselves to dialogue and sort of find a way of talking about this, a lot of them. And so the language is extremely technical, and it's almost out of reach for parish pastors who have gone through the seminary and some of it. I mean, you really have to work at reading some of that stuff and then somehow trying to apply it. And so what I'm trying to do today, somewhat modestly, is to try and make some applications for two words that I think can be a really big help to us in finding our place in creation. And there's some very old words, and words that Douglas Hall, in particular, in a book that I hope will come back into print, it's called Imaging God, Dominion and Stewardship, tries to deal with. He says it's time that we pick up some of the old words like stewardship, for example, that we've somehow reduced to collecting money for the church and give it its full meaning and worth back again. And he said it's possible to redeem some of these old words and to make application in our lives. And the two words that he picks up in this book are imaging and dominion, and I'm hoping to expand upon those. Douglas Hall also says in some of his other books that we are in North America, and of course he's a Canadian talking about us in some sense, we are in a sense a society living within denial. We are not acknowledging a great deal of the darkness that we have brought into the world. We try and live with a false sense of life. We gloss over the things that are going wrong. We avoid some basic facts about the degradations that we have brought upon the earth itself. And it's time that we, especially as Christians and followers of the cross, you know, make our way with Christ back into the darkness so that we can be part of God's redemptive purpose in the whole world. And it's really interesting when you start thinking about this and you start just looking at the way that we as Americans sort of refer to ourselves. And let me just give you one example. You know, one of the words that we most commonly address or use to describe ourselves today as a people is consumer. Now stop and think about that for a minute. You know, what kind of images come to your mind when you think about something that is a consumer, something that consumes, uses it up and for it, its own purpose.
It's appetite. Taking something, using it, and then it's no longer there. It's gone. It's finished.
I think of something like these caterpillars that form on trees, and just sort of eat bagworms that just sort of eat the whole tree up and then go on to the next tree, and the tree's dead. I mean, I'm sure there's a purpose for them in creation. I haven't figured it out yet, but, like mosquitoes. But I mean... You know, when you think about that and you start to deal with this, and I'd like to do some of that when we talk about recycling next Monday, if some of you are here, it really sort of hits you between the eyes, and it says, goodness, we really do need some new images for ourselves, because in fact, we are in many ways victims these days of our own self-imaging and what we have created for ourselves and said about ourselves.
Yeah, I work for a health maintenance organization, and it's a cooperative, and I no longer have patients. They're consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers of health care.
Yes.
And what are they consuming? What, I feel like I'm bringing little packages of health care to my patients. And that, it really, because to me it's sort of a bond between patient and caregiver, and it seems like that has been destroyed, but nobody, and I raise the issue, and I think but everybody just looks at me funny.
But it's an inappropriately
it seems
description.
Inappropriate to me.
Well, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone who needs that service, it seems inappropriate. I can tell you that.
Yeah, consumer relationship.
It takes me to tell you from a service to a good,
right? It's weird.
Yeah,
this is really getting off. But if you see Bernie Siegel, the man that wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles. He wants a whole new word, because you need a whole new way of thinking.
Oh, what did he come up with?
Response, which is a responsible participant. That the patient comes together with the doctor to talk about the patient's health and everything that comes to be done. And that the one person can't just check the other person out. The other person has to participate, give the information, and then participate in the holistic treatment that would be to give that person help. And that's why I also want to talk about the word stewardship. I want to throw out the word stewardship.
I don't like it either.
Because I don't know if this is really getting us off, but the thing is that we've had Phil Hefner, this one of my teachers at Lutheran School of Theology, says that we sometimes think of the earth as an estate. Something we were talking about caring for creation like we're caring for an estate, but the thing is you can move to another estate.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you talk about the earth as your home, you have to make sure that you understand that there is no other home for you to move to. That it's better to think about the earth as make sure that that you are of creation, that you are of the earth. There is no other earth for you to go to. And when you think of when you say that the trees are your lungs, that's not a metaphor. The trees really do supply the oxygen for you. And if you lose the trees, you lose your lungs. You lose your air.
And that's a good corrective for a society that's become so mobile, where, in a sense, we've lost, which is another reason for our lost sense of place. People like John Updike have written about that in Run, Rabbit, Run and some of his other novels. He's really writing about a placeless, people. And it's very difficult then to use those same metaphors within that new context. And so I think that's very true. I really would like to continue this sort of dialogue as we go on with the words. So I really invite this. Okay, this is just wonderful. I was afraid this wouldn't happen, quite frankly. And I don't want to just sit here and talk for 45 minutes or whatever. I want to say one other thing by way of introduction. And I heard this from Larry Rasmussen, who teaches at Union Theological Seminary and was in Madison, Wisconsin, where we live last September, and we asked Larry to talk about whether or not it was possible to have an ecologically sound system of economics. That was a very interesting discussion. But within that context of that presentation, he said he really is concerned about how the church is positioned today to deal with the issues that we are living with. We are conditioned to live from an understanding of our weakness as God's people. We come to church on Sunday morning, A, to have our sins forgiven, to have the weakness that we have exhibited during the last week taken care of, so that we can go out with our sins forgiven and live another week and then come back, you know, and it's sort of a seven-day cyclical kind of a thing, but always dwelling upon the weakness, what's wrong with us, you know, within the church. You know, forgetting that along with that, in Luther's understanding of the cross, he said God, in God's weakness on the cross, is stronger than the strength of human beings. I mean, you know, but he said today especially, we need to live within the context of a more complete and fuller understanding of our faith that's in Jesus Christ. And that is that we also live from the power of the cross and the power of the resurrection, where we are more, you know, than simply weak creatures. But God empowers us, gifts us, and encourages us and invites us to participate in the ongoing creation of the world and the recreation, the restoration of the world in Jesus Christ. You know, Paul says is it 1 or 2 Corinthians 2:5, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he or she is a new creation. The old has passed away. Behold, the new has come. You know, and he challenged us to have enough faith to trust God enough that God wants us to be part of this, and to use the gifts and to believe that we can be part of God's reconciling the whole creation. And that, he said, ought to be the new framework or context of how we function as God's people today, with all the tremendous challenges that are facing us as God's people. Well, let's take a look at these two words just briefly. And again, I encourage you to jump in, because it's very easy when you're sitting without pad and paper to forget or to get on with something else. Let's deal with the word image in the first place. My biblical theology paper when I was a senior back in 1970 at the seminary was on what is it to be the image of God. And I wrote that on Genesis 1:26 through 20:31. And I'll read this one, but maybe toward the end of this I would encourage some of you to read from a couple New Testament spots, if you would. Some familiar words from Genesis 1. Then God said, "Let us make man," I've got traditional version here, "in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish and over the of the sea and over the birds of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit, you shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, and the sixth day. The words image and dominion are very much a part of that text, and they've been a continued part of how we understand ourselves as human beings, certainly within the faith. The word image from the Hebrew is the word tselem. It refers to, really, the best way of describing this is to be a concrete representation. a representation of God in the flesh, right here and now. That's what you are created to be. You know, it's not a material kind of a thing, you know, but rather we are, and a mirror is a nice way of describing this. We are as mirrors, not to reflect ourselves, but to reflect God through our lives, or the goodness of God, and to help others see, you know, the goodness of God and the goodness that, and the mysteries of God and all that, that God has and that God continues to do. Some people have, I think, mistranslated this word so that they have sort of talked about it as human beings being created with sort of a spark within themselves. They call it a spark of divinity, which I think about candy right away. Maybe that's sweetness at least. But it's sort of a little bit of God in all of us. And that's really, so it's that little bit of God that persists, and then that gets translated into the part of us that goes on after our bodies die, which is also a real problem. But that's really not a good translation. If you look at the very simple sentence, God is the subject of the sentence, and the human creature is the object. And so the question isn't what are we, you know, in all of this, but the question is, what's God doing? What on earth is God up to when God decides to create the human creature in God's image? And as a subject of the sentence, God is really sort of about two things. So there are two parts to the sentence. First of all, the first part is that God makes a decision to create, and to create us. That's the only reason we're here. But then there are also some specifications of what we are created to be. And both of those parts of the sentence indicate that the Creator will make something or someone that is of special personal concern to the Creator. That there is a built-in connectedness with God. God is not going to create this thing and go back to heaven and just sort of see how it comes out. You know, God, there's an infinite connectedness between God and everything that God creates, including the human being. Jürgen Moltmann, by the way, talks about, in his book, God in Creation, talks about the Sabbath. And as part of the rest of the Sabbath, he says that when you rest, you sort of rest and you just sort of let everything happen to you. That's part of our Holden retreat here, I think. And you sort of allow, you give the rest of your life permission to affect you. And let it sort of reevaluate your life. And in this sense, when God rests, he said, God is allowing every creature, everything that God creates, to affect God. And God becomes so affected by everything that God is simply, it's just impossible for God to be separate from the creation. It's a wonderful sort of additional way of looking, I think, at the Sabbath. So God allows life to take place then between God and people, and God creates people to correspond with God in a way that the human existence, you know, is totally dependent upon God. And the role of the human being then in being created in the image of God is that as creatures we are to be in correspondence with God and image God's goodness to the rest of creation. But on the other hand, we speak for our fellow creatures, for the whole rest of the earth, and bring those concerns to God. So we have this sort of in-between, this wonderful role that God has given us in being created in the image. So the really, I think, simple word that helps describe image isn't so much a way that we are, but it's the situation in which we live. It is, we are, the relationship is really the best way, I think, of finding a contemporary way of understanding that word. And it's a relationship that is representative for God and also representative of all the creatures to God, you know. Well,
you mean like we've been elected?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a legislator, you know, congressman, and then we represent the animals before God. That's
exactly.
Sort of an idea.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we bring those concerns. I happen to think that one way we should do that, and we do this in our worship service, we'd never have, at least when I'm picking the prayers, we just never have a series of petitions of prayers without mentioning some other part of the creation besides the human creation. And I say that differently. I say, let us pray for the whole creation and for all people according to their needs, to expand that understanding, you know, of who we are as God's
people. It almost reverses the idea of us being having dominion. It puts us as servants of creation.
Exactly. And we'll talk about servant as dominion as servant as Paul does. That's the proper way, yeah. But I think it takes repetitive, a lot of repetition these days, and I think quite frankly all the time, for us to understand ourselves in that way. And when you start thinking about yourself then as the image of God created in this special role, it's really a wonderful thing. You know, it allows us to just simply be part of the whole joy of the creation. I mean, how can we be part of these mountains and not be joyful, and be part of this human community without being joyful? How can we sit on our porch? Last night when we went back to our place about 10 o'clock, a deer walked up and stood on the neighbor's porch for a while looking at the plants. I mean, how could you not be joyful when you go to sleep? I mean, it's a little harder to be joyful in the middle of the night when the sirens go off. But
I was joyful. I was in my warm, dry bed.
Yeah.
Well, I was joyful for those who went out and were responsible, and it was obvious we could hear that they were taking very good care of things.
And the all clear, yeah. All clear, so, was joyful.
Yeah. So... Well,
just along those lines, along the lines you were mentioning, there's a wonderful children's book by Dr. Seuss called The Lorax, and actually his favorite book. And it has to do with this creature, you know, Dr. Seuss creatures, and he comes to this this beautiful area of trees. They're called truffula trees. And the little brown barbalutes are in their barbalute suits eating truffula fruits, and it's just a wonderful thing. And the tufts of the truffula trees are very soft and silky, and he figures that that these would be in great demand, so he chops down a truffula tree and knits a thneed, which everyone needs. So he makes these thneeds that everyone needs, and shortly after he starts whacking off truffula trees, this creature pops out of a stump. This is the Lorax. And there's just a wonderful line that just always kind of rings in my head. He says, "I'm the Lorax. I speak for the trees. The trees cannot speak for themselves." And so all through the story, and there's a greater and greater pollution, and finally he whacks off the last truffula tree. The Lorax comes back interceding for the trees and the barbalutes and the fish and the swarmy swans. And I think that's our role too.
What is the name of that book?
It's called The Lorax, L-O-R-A-X.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Jan, do you know if that's in our library?
There were plenty of copies earlier in the bookstore. I assume they're still there, and if it's in the bookstore, it's meant to be in the library.
Okay.
Around here, that's no guarantee.
Okay.
I did see some copies in the library early last week.
Yeah.
It should be there.
But you can buy it in most bookstores.
Well, we looked all over Madison one year.
They were out because they'd sold a lot.
Yeah. It's recently written, in the 80s sometime. Mm-hmm.
But it's a wonderful addition to your church library. We have one at home, we read a lot. So. Mm-hmm.
And the Butter Battle book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm reading this book by Thomas Berry, Dream of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've read.
I've got it, I haven't read it.
Yeah, it's well worth reading. But I was reading it last night thinking about, you know, what we talked about yesterday. And there's a chapter in there where he talks about the problems of American Christian spirituality. And one thing that he points out is that there's an emphasis like on a covenant relationship, which we were in a way kind of talking about between man and God. And as soon as you change that locus between man and God, then you lose nature as a place where man and God can meet. And that has been an emphasis that has led us, you know, away. He says there's been a strain of understanding within the Christian tradition, but we have pretty much...
Do you mean when we get too involved in this dual relationship?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when I think back in Sunday school, there's a lot of talk about the covenant between God and the Israelites, and then Christ is the new covenant, and we get thinking about covenants, and we forget who we are, and then your story yesterday about how we are stardust. What happened to that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've lost that.
And a lot of it is in the popular jargon, just me and Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, do you have a personal relationship with
Jesus? Yeah, right.
And all the rest of creation falls by the way.
Yeah, in fact, there's another chapter in here where he says the big problem with Western Christianity was that it went off into the direction of personal redemption. Mm-hmm. And that became so emphasized that we lost the rest of it. Mm-hmm.
There's really a New Testament passage that I would think with the people who matter in a way that could restore some of that, and that's the Great Commission as it footnoted in Mark. I asked a biblical scholar earlier this year at what date, you know, because they leave it out of some passages of Mark because it wasn't part of the original first century text. He placed it second century. I don't know if that's correct, but the Great Commission in Mark is to go unto all creation and preach the gospel, not to all nations, to all creation. Mm-hmm. To preach the gospel. Mm-hmm. I think it's restored there quite definitely.
Yeah.
The fairly early text.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, I think it's there in most of the texts, mm-hmm. but it was lost in, through the Middle Ages and certainly in the Renaissance in the Church. And some people have gone to length to describe how we've really lost that. And it's just so obvious in so many of the texts when you just go back and read them. It's all the way through Paul. You know, we've taken that right out of Paul as Lutherans, I think. It's just, we'll refer to a few of those texts in a few minutes here, but the one that I just mentioned from Corinthians, you know, just, you know, we don't talk about ourselves as being a new creation. And yet he uses that in his old and new Adam imagery all the time, you know. That's part of it. Let's take a look at the word dominion. The word dominion from the Hebrew is really a bad translation. And I didn't read, you recommended that I read Sittler last night. So, and would you like to? Do you have it? Go ahead.
Well, this book is Joseph Sittler's Gravity and Grace, and it's a collection of his thoughts. An editor put it together. And he talks about particular problems. He says, I think the reasons Lutheran theology and piety are not known for any specific or analytically delicate feelings for the problems of the environment are several. And first one, first we use the Old Testament in our praises, in our liturgical actions with right gratitude, but we have quite sharply misunderstood the first chapter of Genesis. Then it has Genesis 1:28. And it says, the word dominion is a direct English effort to translate the Latin. In English, dominion suggests domination. Of course, the Latin word is domineering. And, the word dominion is a direct English effort to translate the Latin. In English, dominion suggests domination, but that is rather incorrect translation. The Hebrew statement is rather, quote, and God said you are to exercise care over the earth and to hold it in its proper place. That the when the Latin translation was made of the Hebrew, that they used the word domineering, and then that suggests our word. So we naturally take the word domination. but it means much more to care for and preserve than to use as you see fit.
And not only as you see fit, but I think to as you see fit for the human
to consume.
Creature to consume. So the only questions, and I think you can see this in a lot of contemporary discussions about how we care for specific aspects of the creation. The primary question, you know, is it how economically feasible is this? Well, who do economics belong to? They don't belong to the rest of creation. It's just caring for and caring as much about the rest of creation as we care about ourselves. Did you have more?
Yeah. Let me read this one last paragraph that ends this chapter. The whole first chapter is sort of on environmental, how to approach environmental concerns. And he ends it with this paragraph. A working, joyful relation to the land has spirited, health-giving power. Around 1684, an old Puritan preacher, William Davenport, said in a famous sermon, "We have been dispatched by God and by history on an errand into the wilderness to create on this land a city on a hill, a light in the wilderness to all people." This is a marvelous statement about the promise and hope of the first people who came to this country. They came to this fabulous continent for a fresh opportunity. In some ways, the American achievements have been great. We have exercised the American characteristics of goodness of heart, hard work, ingenuity, and cooperative adventureness. Many good things have come out of the American experience, but we have paid a high price for them in the way we have assaulted the land. Our errand into the wilderness has tempted us to forget the message we were sent to deliver. Mm-hmm. I mean, and when you just think about Holden and about the people that built the road up this valley, they came in, they assaulted Copper Mountain, and they left. And that's what I'm afraid the whole planet's going to look like if we, I mean, I think we're on our way to extinction until we have to repent, turn around, have mm-hmm. a change of heart. And I mean, that's what I really worry about, is that that's what the planet is going to look like. Because I think the planet will stay, you know, there'll be some life on the planet. But you know, one thing that I have, talk about, you know, we're going to cook ourselves in a toxic soup. It's going to get so warm, it's going to be so toxic that human life will give out.
I was here in December when we talked about this. Jerry Barney was here for 2 weeks, and we really came to the conclusion then that in some ways we're extremely arrogant as human beings, because we talk about how we're going to destroy the world. We're not going to destroy the world. We can. We may destroy some of the outer layer of the earth so that it becomes uninhabitable for us and other creatures. We're not going to destroy everything, and other creatures will persist. And one of the things that just hit me between the eyes, I've heard this, but I saw it again. We stopped at Dinosaur National Monument on our way here, and you know, here they talk about the dinosaurs being on the face of the earth for 100 million years, and human beings have been here for 100,000 years. That sort of puts it into a little different perspective. And I think we need to understand some of these things, and maybe take ourselves less seriously, but our role, proper role, more seriously.
There's an excellent poem in the book, Thinking Like a Mountain. Called Passenger Pigeons. And look it up over in the bookstore. Go buy the book. Oh, sorry. A poem called Passenger Pigeons, and it's in the book Thinking Like a Mountain over in the bookstore. It's well worth reading. Just says what he just said.
We actually are just a burp in time. And that's kind of a nice analogy, because it's not real elegant. and if you come this afternoon, one of the things that I've decided to talk about just for a little bit, just for a little plug for this afternoon, is environmental ethics and three different ways of looking at how we see the environment. And I think it's very appropriate, because it really views, do we see the environment as useful for humanity in some way. Do we see it as a biotic community that deserves respect? Do we see it as a whole, almost superorganism, the earth? Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that a little bit this afternoon.
How did we get from the image of God to a bird?
Dominion.
Dominion.
We went to. Yeah.
Let's talk about dominion a little bit here.
Yeah.
I'm going to sort of focus us back to when.
But that's a good question.
Okay.
In other words, she's saying, yes, we're the image of God, and yet in time, looking at the history of the earth, mm-hmm. if it takes something like 163 sheets of 8.5 by 11 paper to cover earth history, and we're half of a pencil mark on mm-hmm. the far corner, mm-hmm. that's what I mean by bird.
Mm-hmm. We are finite.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't make us, I mean, a lot of people feel like we're really not very important. That's the problem. Mm-hmm.
But what the scriptures want us to know is that we're important, not because of anything except that God says we're important. God creates us to be important, and God redeems us along with the whole creation to be important. That's where our importance comes, our whole sense of who we are and our being.
Being, not doing.
Yeah, uh-huh. exactly. Uh-huh. But once we get into doing, and that's what we lose, is a very simple thing. If it comes from God, then we have it all. I mean, that's the gospel. The context of the word for the Jewish, ancient Jewish people, for the word dominion, adding a little bit more to this, is that the folks around them had a little different understanding. In the Sumerian myth, for example, the word meant to sort of be servants for the gods. So there was this upward emphasis. The human being was here to sort of do all the dish duty and the garbology duty for the gods, you know, which I, by the way, I'm enjoying those. But I mean, it's sort of to be the fall guys for the gods. I mean, to do everything that the gods don't want to do, and then that's just it. But in what's very interesting in the Genesis story, and it's done intentionally, is that the emphasis is downward, that the human being is created within and for the earth, to care for the earth on behalf of God. So the focus is not upward, but the focus is downward, which is a wonderful thing when you think about it. And I think if there's anything that we need today, within the church, it's a sense of earthiness. You know, a little earthy piety would do us a whole lot of good, I think, in understanding that we are part of the earth, and this is something to celebrate, and that it's good because God says it's good, and for no other reason. But that's a very much a part of that, and the word was, at least in the first instance, is meant to talk about our the human relationship to other animals. That is, it's like the shepherd cares for the sheep. It speaks on behalf of the sheep. The horse trainer trains the horse. The person who has dogs cares for, you know, I mean, it's a relationship with the other mammals, as it were. But also, then it goes on, you know, then it becomes a reflection for the way the human attitude should be for the whole rest of creation. But it sort of works out from that relationship with the animal kingdom. Now, the other thing I heard from Sittler, and we've got some of Sittler's tapes, or three that I purchased here in December and then listened to in the van coming out, I think it was from a fireside chat, is that he says, well, another way of looking at this business of dominion is to say that to have dominion is to see the place of everything else in creation, and to recognize it and make sure that everything else has its rightful place, and to work with God to maintain the place of everything, which I think is a wonderful way of looking at that. Now again, I go back to, of course, that's a Christian model and a Christian role, but goodness sakes, that we talk about a need for science, you know, today. I mean, who can understand the creation and the place of everything better than our scientists today? And all the wonderful scientists we have within the church that we need to affirm and affirm what they're doing. And not only that, but I mean, one of the tragedies of the rainforest burning today is that there are just a tremendous number of creatures that will go into extinction before they're even ever named. You know, the scriptures say we have this obligation to name everything, to give it its place, in other words. And I think that's another kind of a wonderful way of looking at the word dominion. Unfortunately, it's very hard to make that a positive word because of what it means from the Latin to the English. And maybe we need a totally different word, or we should stop using it and just say what we mean rather than use the word. Paul argues that the word is still redeemable, but there may be an awful lot of hurdles to get over in doing that. But I want to say that the other word that I'd like to pull in here that Paul sort of says, Paul says in regard to this, is the word to bless, because you notice God blesses the creation, and blessing is a part of this all the way through. And you wonder, well, what on earth does blessing mean? And it means a lot of things. But one of the things that it means is to bless something, is to help a species or an individual thing or person become what they are created to be. You know, it really fits into maintaining the place of that, but not just maintaining the place, but be an active part of that species or that person or that thing's becoming what it was created to be, to nurture, you know, and to care for. And we are called
back to God again,
yeah,
to be fully itself for what God intended it to be.
Mm-hmm. And there we are, representatives again, an image. And I just think these words fit together just beautifully, and the concepts that come with them. But it's really important to pull that word in too.
I think of the Native American idea of being part of nature.
Oh, yes.
And Chief Seattle's famous speeches, and we were in New Zealand last summer, and we bought a parchment that had those quotes of Chief Seattle. I thought, wow, we're in New Zealand. They looked to what he had said.
Well, as I understand it, Chief Seattle, was he also a Christian? Mm-hmm.
He's buried next to a Catholic church.
Yeah, I believe so. But he brought that sense of spirituality, which quite frankly in that speech, I think seems to me, he had it before he read Genesis probably, but there's so much in common there that they just fit beautifully together.
We so often think of the Native Americans as pagans, you know, and as people that need to be, have their ideas changed. I think we need to learn some from them.
That's right.
I was just going to say, I don't know how many of you would go this far, and I'm not sure how far I go with it, but Meister Eckhart says that every creature is the Word of God. And you're talking that we are representatives of God. I believe every creature is also a representative of God. Some creatures, of course, say that to me more clearly than others. you know, that in the same sense that you're talking about humans, that we image God to each other and to the rest of creation, I think the rest of creation images God to us. To me, the best example is dogs, of course.
Let me just in regard to that, let me read a little quote that Paul lifts. And he begins by quoting Dostoevsky. Man counsels Dostoevsky's father, Zosima, love the animals. Do not pride yourself on your superiority to the animals. They are without sin. Only when human, and then Hall goes on to say, only when human pride has been chastened by the knowledge of our distortion and our creaturely status is it possible for us to have some share in God's own joy of the creation. When self-preservation gives way to the preservation of a world that is larger than self and larger than our own kind, we may begin to image God's dominion in our stewardship of that world. I'll find it. I didn't bring, there's a quote from Martin Buber too, who says, only when we can believe that the rest of creation also images God, but in a different way, could we begin, you know, to understand our role and appreciate it. and become part of the wholeness of God's dominion over the earth. Very, you know, a wonderful, you know, there are, I had several quotes this morning. I left Martin Buber's up in my room, so, but he says the very same thing here. Mm-hmm. Want to affirm that.
I would go even more, I would go even farther than that, which may be approaching radical, the R word, but I, you know, these rocks to me,
oh yes,
are not only messengers from deep time, but they image God also, and the air that we breathe, and the water that comes from the heavens, and the inanimate creation to me speaks as loudly as animate creation.
Yeah. There's a lovely passage. I don't know whether you've gotten to the chapter yet in Barry's book here. The beginning of the chapter on the Hudson River as an ecosystem, mm-hmm. where he says, "Tell me your story." Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful description there of the entire creation speaking, mm-hmm. telling the story of God. Mm-hmm. But it's very beautiful. So read the book.
I will. I won't find that right away.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. I can see dominion in the terms you're talking about, in terms of servanthood or mm-hmm. us caring for creation, living in harmony, you know, being blessed to be a blessing. But also, to me, it implies a certain hierarchy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think some people turn that upside down. The sheep herder cares for the sheep, but it's also okay for the sheep herder to eat the sheep. And, you know, there are people who are saying it's not okay to use animals to save human lives in some of these experiment things. Mm-hmm. People are saying, how dare you wear leather? Because that comes from an animal, even though we raise the cows for that purpose.
Come this afternoon, and we'll talk
read
about
the t-shirt.
Environmental ethics.
Mm-hmm. Your t-shirt?
Yeah, read
the t-shirt.
It's a very
keep the balance.
It's a very, very complicated ethical thing that we probably should have a whole session on that.
Yeah.
I can see the stewardship and the caring, but there's also a certain balance that, to me, human life is still more important than animal life.
But the problem I have with that, and I want to throw it because it's a problem I have with being vegetarian for that reason alone. Is that I have just as high a regard for plant life as I do for animal life.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so how can I differentiate between those two? I was raised on a farm where we raised animals, and the animal that we would often eat for ourselves on the farm, we raised beef, and at that time, the beef was very dear, and we rarely kept one for ourselves. We needed the money. But if there would be one where something went wrong with it, where it bloated in the summertime or whatever, and had a very low market value, we kept that one and ate some of the steaks and roasts and a lot of hamburger. But then we sort of adopted that animal for our pet as kids. And that animal was very special. And it was, I'm telling you, when you had that animal over the winter and consumed it, you know, as part of your being, you had a deep, deep respect for what that animal had done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I really think that maybe if we could have that sense restored in our for all things that we eat and that we need, we would not fill our closets quite so full, and the things that we put on our table would be different.
You meet needs, but you don't overconsume. Yeah.
You see what I mean from that?
Down.
That's the best illustration I can pull out from my own experience.
And if you are what you eat, then you became, or that animal became you.
It's all in Christianity.
Really?
Eating is a sacrament.
Yes.
I mean, Christ took the most ordinary elements of a normal meal and said, "This is my body." I mean, eating is a sacrament. Killing and eating animals is a sacrament. We shed their blood gives us life.
And keeps us
totally
warm and you see, I have a love of the earth, of the inanimate part of the earth, and I have a love, believe it or not, of the oil resources that came from ancient forests. And so one way that I look at it sometimes is that the plastics that we use are non-renewable. Animal and plant resources are renewable resources. So there are a number of different ways of looking at it. Would anyone be interested in doing a session on environmental ethics sometimes?
Sure. Yeah. We could do that too.
Well, maybe we can.
I mean, a lot of staff that can't come to sessions can come to a forum, and a lot of people like that forum format.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, you know, gets to throw out an idea or react to an idea.
It'd be great if we could schedule it like last night, that straight after Vespers come here and begin the forum, so we've got that extra half hour on the one topic. Mm-hmm. So it's an hour and a half at least, rather than just an hour, which, as you say, isn't even enough time to get warmed up.
That would be a okay. We'll mention that at staff too, so if we can. I want to end which on something that I think is very important, because I want us to see the New Testament connectedness with this, and especially Jesus and how we understand Jesus. I think that's just so important, and I want to read three things for you. The first one, a very short one, from Paul in 1 Corinthians 15:49, where Paul says, "Just as we have borne the image of the man of dust, we shall also bear the image of the man of heaven." Paul uses the image, and then with imagery language, we go to Colossians, which has become one of my favorite texts in the whole Bible, Colossians 1:15 and following. Talking about Jesus, you know, notice the language. He is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. For in him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. That's such wonderful news. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. For in him all the fullness of God is pleased to dwell, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of his cross. And you, who were once estranged and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he has now reconciled in his body of flesh, by his body of flesh. It's just mind-boggling when you think about that. In order to present you holy and blameless and irreproachable before him, provided that you continue in the faith, stable and steadfast, not shifting from the hope of the gospel which you heard, which has been preached to every creature, you know, under heaven, and of which I, Paul, became a minister. Now, Paul is saying, I became a minister for every creature. You know, I mean, it's just a radical passage. And then, you know, in talking about imagery, or Jesus being the image, and our being drawn into that by the graciousness of God. And then perhaps a more familiar passage talking about dominion and stewardship from Philippians 2, where Paul writes, "Have this mind among yourselves, which you have in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even death on a cross. Therefore God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, that in the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father." You know, there's dominion, and there's image in the New Testament. Just, you know, the two primary passages, but it's certainly found in other places in the New Testament. And there's just this, for me, this obvious continuity that in some ways we just, it's there, but we really need to emphasize it today.
Of course, Paul thought Jesus was coming back any weekend, right?
Yeah. in his earlier writings.
Is, I don't know whether he was thinking this now, you know, how he handled that, but what did he envision then would happen? Does anybody have an idea, like, if Jesus came back very soon?
No, I don't know.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows that.
The reason I was thinking about it, because again, I was reading in Barry about this idea of the millennium.
Yeah.
And thinking about what you were reading from Joseph Sittler and about the American dream and the city on the hill. And he talks about how the idea of, well, it didn't seem like the kingdom came by grace, so the American people decided we're going to bring it. And this was the underlying drive for our technology and industrialization was to bring the millennium.
To bring it in.
To bring it in. And out of that came our consumerism.
We took over for God.
Yeah.
We'll do it, God. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I hadn't thought about that, about Paul and the idea that he really expected Christ very soon. Or I don't know what he thought later.
I don't think, I'm not sure we'll ever know that. Martin Luther, in regard to this, there's that sort of famous quote where someone asked him, well, what should I be doing if I know that God is coming tomorrow? And Martin Luther says, I hope God finds me in my backyard planting a tree, because that's what God created me to do and be.
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, and that was Martin Luther's quote on that, who obviously was a scholar of Paul.
Yeah.
And that might be helpful in your thinking about that.
Because you always think that they thought, well, Jesus was going to come in a spirit, it would be a new spiritual kind of kingdom, mm-hmm. but not an earthly kind of kingdom. That's kind of what I sort of remember from my childhood, yeah. You know, whether it's true or not.
Well, if you think he's coming back, then maybe he'll do the things you wanted to do the first time around that you didn't get to doing. Maybe. Like the political...
I don't know, I know fundamentalists that think, well, why work to save the world because God is coming? You know,
oh, sure.
this earth will end, and we'll have a new heaven and a new earth, and so I kind of thought Paul thought that way.
Maybe it's this earth that will be the new one.
Well, it's not just fundamentalists.
No.
Yeah, it's not just fundamentalists.
It's one of the primary problems in the Lutheran Church, is that people, they almost feel like it's unreligious.
Yeah.
To care for worldly
uh-huh,
things.
Uh-huh. Right.
And what that is I think, I mean, it's more of a schismatic, you know, it's trying to take apart your life and say which is what. And it's very complicated. I can't express my thoughts on it all right now, but it's wrong.
It seems like it's a terrible balancing thing that you're going to constantly have to deal with. I mean, for instance, my backyard, I thought it would be a wonderful nature preserve. But I'm not willing to give up my cherries. I'm not willing to give up my garden in the front yard. That I have to, maybe I should share with creation, but I still have a bug zapper to prevent the apples from getting infested and the cherries. And so it's like, what's for me and what's for nature?
It's part of the dilemma. That'll fall into something if we can have a forum on the ethics.
And the other question is, what is nature? What do we see as nature?
Yeah, it's like we're seeing as something outside of ourselves, mm-hmm. subject-object. We're into that.
And it's not. We are part of it.
Yeah.
Our sin is that we
really
don't...
Funny.
But we construct our all kinds of barriers between us and nature all the time.
Except that nature, I mean, look at our cities, and we are due to finish, but our cities are made of concrete and glass. What's concrete and glass?
Yeah.
It's lime, it's conglomerate gravel, it's water, it's sand. Mm-hmm. Glass is silica, SiO2. There's nothing that we build that is not nature.
But when the weeds come up between the cracks in the concrete, we beat them down or we chemical...
And we call
gritty.
Them weeds. Weeds are only
sure.
plants that aren't
right.
where we want
right.
them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we need to officially sort of wrap this up so they can know what to, so they can wrap the tape up on the other end here too. But I have really appreciated the interchange in this today, and I really hope that you continue because that's really ideally what these should be about. So thank you very much for your participation, and we'll sort of continue this topic for the whole rest of this week and for those of you who will be here next week also.
I thank both of you.